This is the Cultural Fluency Podcast with Angel Preto, the French coach, that is me. And today in episode 19, I have with Monique Lindner, aka the Time Alchemist. Welcome, Monique.
Thank you so much, Angel.
You're welcome. Can you please introduce yourself for the people who don't know you?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, my name is Monique Lindner. I'm also known as the Time Alchemist. And as you would want to put it under an umbrella, I'm a high performance and leadership coach. I have a very holistic approach. So basically, I look at all of your lifestyle, your habits, routines, behavior patterns, your thought patterns, and everything, and bring that back to how you move in this world and what is probably not working in your life and business. And then we're unpacking everything, repackaging everything, and then hopefully getting something better out of it.
That sounds amazing. And so your method is called the Time Method. You spell that with the dots, T-I-M-E. Is that an acronym?
Yeah.
Okay, can you explain it a little bit for our
audience? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I love that it's actually an acronym and that it's time, because obviously I work with time a lot. And I think time for many people has created such pressure and such uncomfort and discomfort, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Like when we think about time, we think about like, oh my God, I don't have time. I need to get so much done and I need to rush and all the things, right? So my acronym means time management, impactful leadership, T-I-M-E. Yeah, I'm thinking ahead a little bit. Mindset mastery and energy efficiency. And then I added now into my work lifestyle design, which is why I jumped ahead in my brain already. Because, you know, we think faster than we talk.
Right.
And so with this time method, I'm taking the business owners and entrepreneurs that I work with through these four pillars, because I truly believe that those four pillars are basically the foundations that every business owner, every entrepreneur, everyone actually needs to create a business that then can grow sustainably and maybe later on can be scaled sustainably, because that's two different things too. Right. And so if you don't have those pillars in place, just imagine to build a castle on sand, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have those pillars, your castle will sink, your castle will break down, your castle will maybe just fall apart like a house of cards. And this is why I created this framework. It's basically a framework which I base my work on. And it's very powerful and has created a lot of aha moments, but mostly massive transformations for the people I work with.
That sounds awesome. And you said that your mission is to redefine work by creating a human-centered work culture. And I'm like, mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. I wish work culture, I mean, I don't have that issue in my work because it's just my business, but most people don't have that. So can you please tell us more about what that corresponds to and how you achieve that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, first of all, I just want to say why this is so important to me, because I come from Germany. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, I happen to have experienced, I would say 90% of the time, a work culture that is not human-centered.
That is my experience as well.
Yeah.
Especially in Germany. I was in Germany when I started my business, and I think the work culture there was a very important cause for that. So yeah.
Yeah. And you know, when like I was born in East Germany, so when Germany was still separated, and so that was a socialist communist country by this time, ruled by the Soviet Union. And so I think that that drives home a little bit even more the point of how my work ethic was so conditioned by, we don't have time, money doesn't grow on trees. If you want to achieve something, you need to work hard. But even if you work hard, no one will ever thank you for it. And like, all of these type of things. And that was reinforced by what I experienced in the work field. So I have been working in corporate Germany for most of my time, but also in startups and in agencies. And I kid you not, if you didn't hit your numbers, not only were you told, hey, you didn't hit your numbers, but you were bullied, you were discriminated, you were diminished, you were literally like yelled at. And the first thing they said is like, you know, there's a line outside of this building waiting just to replace you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, so you're every single day you go with this feeling of, I have a hard time explaining feelings, you may resonate, but as if I always say, as if a hippopotamus sits on your chest, because it's like, you can't breathe properly, you're so afraid of just being replaced, of being rejected for everything. And so no one ever cared about you. No one cared about your feelings. No one cared about if you had chronic illnesses and pain, which was my experience. I have been born with chronic illnesses and pain. No one cared ever about if you had better ideas, better solutions, better processes, right, which was also my experience. I often had those, but don't you dare asking. Don't you dare say something. Don't you dare do something different, you know? And so after being in this environment for so long, like I started working when I was 13 years old and I left Germany when I was 26. So after 13 years, I burned out twice. Mm-hmm. I died of overworking once with a cardiac arrest. And I just, like, I've tried everything. I tried to be extra charming, and even this didn't work out, especially for me. And so when I then traveled all over the world, and I've been to 45 countries, I lived in 9 different ones and worked in these 9 countries, I've just seen there are other versions of it. There's another solution. And mind you, they're not perfect, but more and more have I come to the conclusion, if we put the human being in the center, not only, and everyone will think like, oh my God, that's going to be so complicated because everyone is different. Yes, exactly. Everyone is different. And that's the point. But if we are capable of putting the needs and also the ideas and just listen more, if we put this in the center of why we build companies and how we build them, then we get so much more benefits out of them. Then you don't have to ask anymore, did you achieve your KPIs? Because that's a natural product and the natural result. And so basically what I mean with human-centered work culture is I want to get away from, quite frankly, the patriarchal and consumerist approach from faster, harder, better, stronger, more and more and more, to who are we and what can we do in order to get further together, in order to like soar higher together, you know, so that we can all achieve more together. And it's a win-win-win for everyone involved, and not just for the one who owns the company, not just for the Bezoses and the Musks and the I don't know who else is in the world who benefits the most, but everyone else is just kind of being dragged along.
That sounds amazing. And I love everything you said. I had so many questions popping up. Oh, we could branch out here. I'll try to put that in some order. What struck me at the beginning of what you said, that you grew up in a communist country and yet you developed all of the same limiting beliefs that the rest of us who grew up in the quote-unquote capitalistic world have. You know, money doesn't grow on tree, we don't have time, the exact same culture practically. And then when East Germany became capitalistic by being reunified with the whole of Germany, nothing changed, even though in theory those are absolutely opposite political views. That is, I mean, I'm not surprised because I've been into that story for a long time, but I think for a lot of people, they would think that the communism is just completely different. But what you seem to say is that not only it's not different, it's practically the same experience you've had, if I got that right, but also then later on you went to other cultures that were actually different. And I would love to hear more, because to me, being so extremely Western-centric, it seems that it's really, really hard to get out of that situation. And even hearing mm-hmm. that people who grew up in communist countries had the same experience, it does not encourage me to think we can get out.
Okay, so let me try to get into that. So I wouldn't say my experience was the same, because I truly believe my experience was very different to grow up in a socialist communist country. The reason why is because maybe people should Google that, because if I go into that, I'm going to talk hours about it, what the experience was. Just Google East Germany and what the experience of people were, right? One experience though I want to share really quickly is there was just no free market, mm-hmm. right? So right. In the capitalist Western world, there's like free market sharing and everything. Like, you can offer something, I can buy it from you. Yay!
Right.
In a socialist and a specialist, especially communist world, that's also mostly driven by the government, right? And so especially in a socialist communist country, so that meant my parents, if they wanted to buy anything that was not produced in the country, for example, fruit, right. oranges, bananas, anything like this, they would have to line up in front of a supermarket, and it would take up to 8, if not longer, hours to wait.
Right.
They had food stamps from the government that would identify and verify how many people live in the household, how old those people are. So basically, we are 4 people, my sister and I, and like my parents. And then based on that, how many pieces of fruit per fruit they would get. So for 4 people, they would get 2 bananas for 1 week.
So that is even more an experience of scarcity than the rest of us. Like, people who grew up poor in capitalistic countries speak about the experience of scarcity, but yours is it's not even linked to being poor. It's just how it is for everyone.
And then the bananas wouldn't be like three German marks like in West Germany. They would have been like 8 German marks, because they were imported.
So it was also expensive on top of
that. Way more expensive.
Right.
So...
so the food stamps were not enabling you to get them. You also had to pay. You did it both.
Of course.
It's like 2 currencies, food stamps and actual money.
Yes, and time. So then my parents had to, so the currency of time. So my mom had to line up in the morning, and then my dad would come at lunchtime to switch her in. And then he would wait through lunchtime, and then my mom switch him in after her work again. Like, it was crazy, you know?
That is a lot of work for some bananas.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, obviously, how often would we have bananas? Like, once a month, maybe? Because that is just impossible. So that's where my limiting beliefs from time is money, money doesn't grow on trees, you don't bet for money, and like all of these kind of things comes from. Like, because if you actually wanted to get something for money, all of the currencies, time, money, and the scarcity would all come in. It wasn't just like, I can't pay for it. No, we
so
can't
your experience
wait for
was worse by a whole or there. 2 order of magnitudes, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay,
and
I get
just
it now.
Also, one more thing. We didn't have any, and I mean that, any access to external brands, like American brands, nothing. Everything that you had in like France, we would produce ourselves. The chocolate with the peanuts, we had our East German version, not even the West German one, the East German version of it. Everything like this, right? And so I come from a town that didn't even have, and that was the only area, didn't even have access to newspaper, TV, and radio from West Germany. Not even that. We've been cut off from
everything. Was absolutely localized. Did you have anything coming from the rest of the communist bloc, like Russia or anything like that? Or it was just all East Germany?
Yes, we had news coming in from Russia, but there was only one channel, and it was very censored in what we would, what they would, basically it was a it was a particular channel for East Germany, and they would just filter in what they want
they would
us
to trickle down the information they wanted you to have, translate that to German, and then feed it to you.
No, it was in Russian because
it was all in Russian. Okay.
We were forced to learn Russian.
Yeah. So you actually learned Russian in school, and then you
no. I wasn't in school.
You wasn't in school. Oh my God. I have so many assumptions that are wrong.
Yeah, that's
what
okay.
Happened?
So that's where the limiting beliefs and everything comes from, right? And so what was the second part of the question again?
The first part of my question was actually proven wrong because I was assuming that you had similar experience. It's kind of like, it's not that it's fundamentally different. It's more like it's bigger by another order of magnitude, right? It's like every experience that people who lived in scarcity in the West had, you had it times 1,000, if I summarize what you said, right?
Yeah.
Because then it's not just money, time and food stamp and everything.
Yeah. And also I think it was just like, and I don't know if people know that, but in East Germany, if we were trying to flee, if we were trying to run away, if we were trying to send letters, packages, or anything that would just imply that we want to leave, we'd be shot in the face. We would be tracked down, shot in the face. There was the secret social police that's been implemented in East Germany. And basically what that was there was a social police force, but every person was rewarded for spying on every person in your surrounding, neighbors, families, friends, teachers, everything. And if you don't do that, you were punished. So most of my family got punished because they wouldn't spy on anyone. Now, so I do want to say our experience was very different. Now, what wasn't different is the limiting beliefs that got out of that. Right.
Right.
So you were right. Like, why are my beliefs very similar to most of the people in the world? And I think it's because we live in a duality, right? Mm-hmm. There's either abundance or scarcity. So where could I end up? Either in abundance or in scarcity. Most likely in an environment like this, it would have been
statistically scarcity. Yes.
Yeah. So I think to answer your question, was my experience very different? I think very different because there's so much I haven't even touched on. Why did I get the same limiting beliefs? Because in the duality in which we live, I could have only gotten out either way. And most likely with the experience, it would have been scarcity.
Right. That makes sense. That makes total sense. Yeah. Yeah, and so the other half of my question was that later on, you said you traveled to 45 countries and you actually found cultures that work differently. And I would love to hear more about that. Like, which cultures have you found work better for the human? Which culture have inspired you to have your method, which is more human-centered and not capital-centered or government-centered? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting because I'm going to be honest, I haven't found a particular culture that's the one that would inspire me to do things different. It's more like the experience of all of it together that made me think of, well, if that extreme doesn't work and that extreme doesn't work, we need to be like creating something that's more, I don't want to say balance because balance, a lot of people think about 50-50 and it's never going to be 50-50.
Right.
But still something more the middle way, you know?
Like more and integrated?
So, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I'm currently, for example, in a country that's Thailand, and their work culture is very different from Germany, very much the opposite. It's like, I'm not going to do it today and probably not going to do it tomorrow. Maybe I'm going to do it next year. Let's see how it goes. I'm going to do relaxing a little bit more. Right. And no offense to that. It's just the culture, right? And also the time that they perceive is very different. So if they say, I'll see you tomorrow at 11, you probably see them more around 2 p.m.
Okay.
And
that would drive me crazy.
Look.
Yeah. You being German, it should be even worse than me.
It's not easy. And so it's very interesting. But they have an extreme hierarchy at work,
right?
Way more than Germans, which is interesting, because you would think in Germany we have a hierarchy that is very top down, whereas it actually isn't as bad in Germany. You can climb the ladder fairly fast if you know what you do. But here, climbing the ladder, good luck.
There's no ladder.
Barely, yeah.
Right.
You're just at your level, and then it's not like Super Mario, you know, like you're at your level and you've got to be good. And the crazy thing is there are responsibilities for each level, but if you are asked to do the level that the responsibility or a task for the next level, no, I cannot. I cannot, and I you need to go to my manager. That's the top answer here. You need to go to my manager. And I say, can you please get your manager then? No. Is that also not your task? No. You need to ask the supervisor. It drives you insane. It's really so difficult to get anything done if you're talking to the wrong person, and you're most likely to talk to the wrong person because the right person is never around.
That must be quite the experience for you living in that country and running a coaching business for other businesses to actually be efficient and get things done.
Yeah, but I don't work with the local people here.
Oh yeah, I wasn't assuming you would try. That sounds insane.
Yeah. And so to answer your question is really, I have experienced so many extremes. One short story, I'm trying to be really short.
Sure. It's okay, we've got time.
I lived in Australia, and I used to be a supervisor for a different IT companies and whatnot. And in Australia, I was, due to my visa, just not getting any job for my experience level. So that means I wouldn't get any manager job. I would have to step back in several levels and just sit down and have to do the job I was managing for myself. So I was back at service level jobs myself. So I worked for the transport department in Sydney, and I was being on the phone, and I took, like, usually what I know from Germany, because I have been in managing positions for that, we have to take as many calls as possible per day,
right,
and answer as many tickets and emails per day.
Yes,
that's what I've done. I would take between 80 to 100 calls a day. I would answer almost the same amount of emails and answer around 20 to 40 tickets. After the first month, I was called into my manager's office, and he would sit me down. He's like, "So, Monique, how did you like the first month?" I'm like, "Yeah, a little bit stressful, you know. Seems like the others are a little bit more relaxed. I don't know how they do it." And he's like, "Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about it." I'm like, what have I done wrong? Mind you, I haven't been diagnosed as autistic by this time, so obviously I can't read social cues. Right. I don't know what the hell everyone's doing. And he's like, "So I've seen," and he reads my numbers, "I've seen you've done all of this work, and that's amazing." And I'm like, "Thank you." And he's like, "Yeah, you need to calm down." And I'm like, "Sorry?" "You're too productive. I don't know how else to tell you, but you're doing too much." And I'm like,
that's interesting. This happened in Australia. I would think English speaking cultures are very into productivity.
No, I think it's so interesting. So, because you would think so, but they're very much related to England, right? Because they were colonized by Britain, like,
yes,
300 or so years ago. And we believe that they are very productive, but actually it's just the bare minimum and a bit. And so when I lived in London in 2007, people at 5 would just drop the pen and go to the pub.
Right.
And that's about the same in Australia. Like,
oh, interesting. I mean, it's pretty much what people do in France. It's not my experience I had in Germany or Austria. So yeah, I see what you mean.
Don't you dare leave at 5. Don't you? It says in your contract that's your working time, but the contract is only there that your employer can hold in front of you if you did something wrong. But don't you follow the contract for your benefit.
That
right?
must be terrible if you're autistic, right? Because sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, in Australia, I was basically told to just relax and chill out a little bit and, you know, just like live the surfer's life. And I'm like, I'm not a surfer. I don't know what that means. And they're like, just go with the flow. And I'm like, I still don't know what you mean. He's like, okay, just cut it in half. Just cut it in half and you'll be good. I'm like, and I won't be fired because if I, like, look, I just follow the rules and the rules set. Take as many calls and whatever. And he's like, no. I'm like, okay, write it down for me and put a stamp on it and then I'll do it. And he did. And then everything was good. I was still always the top performer, even with
even cut in half, you were still the top performer. That's impressive.
And it was so boring, I can't tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, if you have to answer emails and calls every day and you can't even challenge yourself to do as many as possible, that would drive me crazy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So now you quit all of that and you started your own business. Is it something you do full time or do you still?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you can now call the shots and answer all the emails. and you have a really interesting website. And if people go to their website, they can find out their chrono energy type. And I was like, oh, what is that? First time hearing about it. I took the test. It turns out I am a day cruiser. And you can tell me more about that and perhaps tell us also what the other types are so people can have an idea what that is about, because this was completely new to me. So I'm assuming it's new to our listeners as well.
Yeah. So there are 4 types of chrono energy types. I have actually developed them myself. You may have heard of a chronotype, which is very similar but different. Yes. And you may have noticed if you are I think it's an owl, a wolf, a dolphin, or a bear.
Okay, so it was 4 as well. Yeah. I mean, I know it with like early bird and lark and stuff like that. Is that the same thing?
Yeah. So that's about that. So, but that has more to do with when you sleep and when you wake up.
Okay.
Those are the chronotypes.
Right.
And what is different to my types is that I have combined your sleep and waking patterns with your typical energetic waves throughout the day.
Right.
And that means we have not only the 24-hour clock in our body that basically demands when you're waking up and when you're getting sleepy, and our 24-hour body clock also demands like the body temperature, our hormones, you know, like the obviously the wake and the sleep cycles and when you're getting hungry, all of these type of things. But one thing that nobody has talked about, I think, before I started, and I'm not claiming that was me, but I'm just saying, like, in combined nature, is those energetic waves, meaning when do you feel very alert and focused and energetic versus when you have this energetic crash and when you feel fatigued throughout the day. And obviously there's a lot of different things that play into that. For example, do you drink a lot of coffee? Do you take any substances? Do you drink alcohol? Do you actually sleep enough or not? Do you eat a lot of fast food or do you eat healthy and all of these things that all play into it? But if we look into your ideal energy waves, those are fairly regular.
Right.
And for you, you would be, so you said it's a day cruiser, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what it
so
told me.
You would, yeah. So do you have your report in front of you?
I do not. I just work on day cruiser. Sorry.
Yeah, don't worry. So you can find these in my book, which I obviously don't have here. So the first one in the morning is the very early one, is the sun chaser. And the sun chaser usually would wake up between 5 and 6-ish. So before the sun rises.
Right.
That's the sun chaser. And usually those are the people that wake up without the alarm that early, basically, right?
Right.
So
I used to actually do that back in the days.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. I mean, it depends. Look, those are not fixed types.
Yeah,
they can
change.
That
was a question I had. Like, does that changes over time for an individual?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can also influence that, but you cannot change, for example, from a night owl to super early without crashing your
Right.
health. Like, you can switch types between the types, so going from one to the other,
Right.
but you can't completely just
Go
like
from one
go
extreme to the next. Right.
Yeah. And so the next one would be, it's always good to remember your own body of work, isn't it? But I have done
It
so
is,
much.
but it's okay. Like, if you don't have it in mind, it's fine.
Well, I think I have them in my,
maybe you can reference the book and people can look it up, or we can send people
yeah,
to your
definitely.
website. What is your
The,
website?
so my website
The...
is thetimealchemist.co,
Right. We'll
and
put that in the
you can
show
take
notes.
The test is the best one to just tell you what yours is.
Right.
And yeah, you can find that. So then we have the day cruiser. I think yours would be like waking up around 10-ish, 9 to 10, right?
It's kind of the situation right now. I don't feel like that is natural for me, but there are two things that influence it. One, burnout. And two, I moved in with my girlfriend last year and she's a total night owl. She's absolutely like, it's like she's in another time zone. And so it just kind of pulls me into her time zone this way. I think we just have not enough space physically to be able to have completely different rhythms. So,
yeah, that is very difficult. It's very difficult.
But it's fine
so
for
yeah.
me. I mean, it works this way. Like, right now, I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying it's the situation.
No, I'm just saying it's difficult for people with two different chrono energy types and not enough space to make it work for each of them. It's definitely difficult. So the day cruiser is basically the latest one in the day. And then we would have the night owl is basically the ones that would wake up in lunchtime and
That's
they're usually getting their focus time up at like 9 p.m., 10 p.m. And then the only thing that I can say for night owls that's really important is you do need, and I mean need, not try, you do need to get in 4 hours of sleep between midnight and 5 a.m. If not, best even 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. because those are the darkest hours of the night in average around the world. And you need 4 hours during the darkest hours of the night in order to restore your brain memory and function and to detox the brain properly.
Okay,
so
that
that
is really interesting to know. I did not know that, and maybe that can definitely help.
Yeah.
So between 11 and 5, you need to have at least 4 hours of sleep in that time.
Yeah.
I'll try harder to do that because it doesn't always work at the moment. So maybe that explains why my brain is so fried all the time.
Yes, it would probably explain that. It's also, you know, we have a lot of light pollution, everything. One thing is definitely like blackout curtains. But then the problem is if you don't wake up with natural light, and you wake up with like you wake up lighter later, you run into the problem that your body gets thrown out of its natural biorhythm. So you're gonna change your natural 24-hour clock and mess it up completely if you use blackout curtains and sleep during the day, for example.
Right. Because it's not just the dark physically, it's also the rhythm of the body and the rhythm of the earth at the same time, right?
Yes. So it's the natural day and night rhythm. It's the natural temperature change. It's a natural like occurrence of different other things. Like you don't want to produce melatonin when you should be producing cholesterol for the day and the other way around.
Right.
And so because that's like all of these hormonal things are supposed to be balancing with when you're hungry, when you're thirsty and all of things. You don't want to be hungry at night. You don't want to be not hungry during the day. Like all of these things is like, it's a whole, our bodies are amazing, but if you don't help the body be amazing, it's going to be messed up. And that's definitely not amazing.
Right. I definitely understand that. So you have to be in tune with the earth rhythm and also, if possible, respect your chrono energy type. But obviously the majority of people in the world are not. Right.
100%.
And the majority of our listeners are not. So if you're listening to this and you say, oh, yes, I'm exactly lined up with my chrono energy type and the earth, kudos to you, but you're in the minority. So for the majority, what can you recommend to them?
Really, the most important thing I would say is get your sleep in order. And I don't mean like get 9 hours, get 8 hours. It's actually different for everyone. The most important thing is you need to get 4 to 6 sleep cycles. And one sleep cycle is 90 to 120 minutes.
All right. So that would be possibly up to 6 times 2 hours, 12 hours?
Does no, that, it's 6 to 10 hours is the window.
Okay.
So 6 to 10 hours is the window. And the only way to really know what your sleep cycles are like would be to track it. And so you can do this with things like the Oura Ring or the Whoop band or whatever you have. And tracking must be a minimum over 3 months, because if you track it for a few days, it doesn't work, because you're always going to be off center for a certain amount of time. So
you
sleeping.
Get yourself an Oura Ring or a Whoop tracker or something. But I don't have one right now. I was definitely considering getting one. So you totally recommend that. And
so
then 3 months.
I recommend it if you have the resources. If you don't have the resources, I recommend.
Well, I can't afford it. I just wondered if it was just a gimmick or if it was something actually useful.
I'm just saying for the people who can't you know, who can't pay for it right now, because those things are not as affordable as they sound like, maybe, you know.
That is definitely true, especially if you want a good one.
Yeah. So then you can just track yourself. When do you go to bed? When do you wake up? And give yourself a rating from 1 to 10, how restful you feel when you wake up, how rested you feel. And if there's anything like, did you wake up during the night? Did you have dreams? Did you have to go to the toilet? Something like this. Just journal about it in the morning. That's the easy method to do it.
Okay, so you can track it on paper with a pen, journal it. Yeah. Then you do that for three months.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then if you have a rating 7 and below, you need to change quite a bit. Like, no matter if that's in the app that you use or if it's on your paper, if your rating is consistently 7 or below, or would be 75% of on Oura Ring or Whoop Band or whatever of restful sleep, you need to change a lot. And then you need to look into nutrition. That is one thing. You probably, if you haven't already, you need to either heavily reduce or stop drinking alcohol. I know
I
that
drink.
Is not...
I know most people will not be in that situation, but yeah, I only drink tea.
Yes, same. Cheers to that. But
nice cup.
Thank you. Isn't it cute?
It is adorable.
thank you. A lot of people don't want to hear how even 1 or 2 drinks a week can completely throw off your sleep.
Right.
So consider it. If it's not that important to you that you sleep well, that's on you. But I highly consider or highly recommend considering reducing that. Sugar, same. Right. Processed sugar. Cutting it out. You actually want to consider to cut out anything that's not natural to us, which means processed foods, right. processed sugars, any substances that are not supposed to be intended by nature. Now, people jump at me when they say, oh, but tobacco is made from nature. Yes. And look at your cigarette.
Too, right? Yeah.
What's in the cigarettes? It's not tobacco. It's everything yeah. else and a little bit tobacco. Yeah, but I can smoke weed. Sure, you can smoke whatever the heck you want. And if you look at the studies plus the actual evidence of what weed does to your brain, weed and any substance really, sugar, alcohol, whatever, reduces the blood flow to your brain, which mm-hmm. is the reason why it makes you sleep better in the first place. And it's also the reason why it, in the long term, can cause or can be also the trigger for any neurological disorders like Alzheimer's, dementia, and so on and so forth. And why you may want to consider to reduce and cut it out. And why you may feel fatigued all the time, or why you have brain fog during the day if you smoke to go to sleep. Right.
That makes sense. So where would you draw the line? Like, would you go full on into the paleo diet, for example, or would you just consider that carbs are acceptable as long as it's something like rice or wheat? I'm wondering, like, you know, because we understand yeah. that everything super processed is bad and everything super natural is good, but where would you draw the line as to like how much you want to cut
I
off?
I personally think if even all of those diets are not very helpful, because there's also extreme. Like right. only carbs is not helpful. Only meat is not helpful. Only vegan is probably not helpful. If you do it for a long term, if you do it right. for a month or two to reset, it's probably helpful in some way. But mm-hmm. I believe you just want to look into a balanced nutrition for you that's made of fresh foods.
Okay.
Rice can be a good food if it's organic and it's not processed, you know?
Right.
And there is non-processed organic rice to be found.
Yeah, so pretty much all of the rice that we would find in the West would not fall in that category.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good to know. We do have our work cut out for us, but you definitely yeah. give a lot of useful tips. So thank you so much. I have so many questions that we haven't gotten to. I need to pick like one. Okay.
Well, we can do a fast round. I can try to answer in seconds.
In seconds. Okay. So you define yourself as an adventurous spirit on the autism spectrum. I was expecting we would speak yeah. about that a lot more, but really fast, can you tell us how that affects how different neurotypes have something to do with, you know, how you work and things like that? Like, can you just give the rapid fire of that?
Okay, adventurous because I travel so much since I'm right. 19 years old, right? I'm 36
yeah.
now. Yeah. And autistic, I only found out 3 years ago, but I have always been very adaptive in my work, which is why I only have a framework and not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Right.
So in my work, the pillars are my guidance as to how and what we're doing with my clients. But I approach everyone as an individual, and I look really holistically at what they do, how they do it, why they do it, and how their brain works, especially, and then have an individual approach how to help them. And that also means sometimes trial and error. If that method doesn't work, how about this one? And we're really, it's almost like a Tetris. We're mm-hmm. just going to piece it all together with all of my knowledge and wisdom that I have, but we are doing it for the best of their benefit. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. That was awesome. Toxic productivity. What do you have to say about that? Short.
Okay.
Maybe we can
record
another episode one day.
So toxic productivity in my eyes is, do you know toxic positivity?
Yes.
Okay. Same, but different. So toxic productivity is if we only want to push harder and faster and better and stronger and all of the things in order to get a certain result. But we never look at maybe if rest is actually getting us to this place faster. Maybe if taking a break would get our creativity better. Like, we're always pushing through no matter what, because that's what we have been told, you know? And right. So I think toxic productivity has been taking over, especially since the hustle and grind culture. And there's no space for any other solution other than pushing through. And it's just toxic.
Right. I totally understand that. So that is also why you tell people to slow down, to speed up. I think you've covered this one. So that's awesome. Last one, a new era of work-life integration.
Yes.
What shifts we need to make in our work and life to adapt to the new normal? So first, like, what would be the new normal in your mind, and how do we do that?
I personally don't think there is a new normal, to be honest. I think we are ever evolving. There is no really something normal. I also think there is just no normal. We are all different. We are all, you know, if we ever want to make something normal, then we have to make something else unnormal, and that's just more room for oppression. So I try to not make something normal. And so how does the new work life integration looks like for me? Really, it's take day by day as a new day and look at what do I need today? What does my team need today? What do I feel? How do I feel? And if you don't feel like, I usually don't know what feelings I have, then look at the sensations in your body and how can I tend to them? And what type of work can I do in order to be the most productive, but also the most caring for myself, right?
Right.
And if, like, I don't know, there is this... I don't know who said it, so I can't quote them right now, but if today you have 40% and you give 40%, then you've given 100%. Yes. And that's what productivity should be to me. We shouldn't be looking like, how can I have 40% and give 100 and like out give myself and burn myself every day? No. How can I give what I have but also get back what I need?
Right. That makes total sense.
Yeah. And how can I actually integrate work into my life? Not the other way around. Right now, we're integrating our lives around our work and try to be all present, all like available all the time. And it should be the other way around. We should be living life and also have work.
Right. You want to center your needs, not just the work you want to achieve, but your needs first and then feel from that. If I'm
trying
to summarize what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I wish we would have so much more time, because there are so much more we could talk about. But thank you so much, Monique, for joining me today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
If you have found this episode helpful, I'm sure you have, because Monique has so many insights and so much wisdom. Please leave a comment below on YouTube, or if you're on the podcast platform, please leave a review. That really helps us have other people find the podcast and get more amazing guests like Monique. So thank you so much. And see you in the next one.
Thank you.